Welcome to Classically Current, where we review new films and old films and link them together with your host, Zach
and Kyle.
Today, we are actually going to be doing the movie Tenet. We are going to review the movie Tenet. I know a lot of fans were anticipating the Groundhog Day release of the episode that we were going to do this week. But due to some deaths in the family for both of us recently, our schedules just didn't align to complete that episode. But we are looking forward to doing that one in the future. We did, however, have time to see the Tenet, the world premiere, well, I guess the national premiere of Tenet on Monday night, which was pretty exciting. I was surprised we even got a ticket. It was 40% capacity in the theater. And Kyle, what did you think of that experience? It felt weird getting into a theater after 5 months.
It was magical, simply magical. No, it was like nice to be actually back in a theater seat where we've been away from for quite some time due to stupid COVID. But yeah, felt pretty much like the good old days of being at the theaters with your friends, watching a movie, yeah, getting excited about it.
Yeah, it's such a communal experience because we saw it with, it was just a group of five of us. And the way they did it was we were able to order tickets ahead of time and we sat all, you know, one next to each other. We all had masks on. Everybody was required to wear masks. There were hand wipe stations going into the building. And the way they did it was 40% capacity in the theater. And there was five of us in a row, but all the other chairs around us were empty. So I felt pretty safe going into this IMAX, because we watched it in IMAX theater too. And I felt pretty safe while going and watching this.
Yes. And I totally forgot how loud IMAX is.
Oh, wow, yeah. Oh,
it
man.
It was quite an experience. Like,
it was
God.
Like going to a rock concert for 2.5 hours.
Yes.
Especially with Christopher Nolan's specific sound design choices, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Krista actually had to leave, if I'm not mistaken, your sister.
Yes, she had to leave because she got a headache that was lingering during the movie, and then it just got to too much, and I don't blame her, because holy cow, if I had a headache and that sound design is just blaring on, I mean, because it's surrounding us, you know, it's just such an immersive experience, and you know, that's what Christopher Nolan intended, but my word, it was overwhelming at times.
Yes.
But we're going to get into some background production information on this movie, because this is a highly anticipated movie for both of us. I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan. I've seen all of his movies. I own most of his movies on Blu-ray, and I loved it. I loved watching his movies ever since the first one I saw, which was Memento. Memento came out, you know, early 2000s. That was his second film. Following the success of his independent movie that he shot for $5,000, which was called Following. But I was excited for this movie. What about you, Kyle?
Yes, I was excited. I know for me personally, I think Christopher Nolan can be an acquired taste at times, at least in my opinion. But I know a lot of people really admire his work, and I definitely have a lot of respect for the work he's done here, and I know it's usually revolved around time and mathematics and science. That's usually that where his inspiration for filmmaking comes from. So high expectations from me for this.
Yeah, and I just have so many memorable Christopher Nolan experiences, because I've seen most of his movies all in theaters to start, and then, you know, get them later on Blu-ray, but yeah. I can just remember I remember the first time I saw Memento was at Broken Arrow Ranch camp. And we were working as camp staff, and we both saw it together on our day off, and our minds were just kind of blown by the uniqueness of the storytelling in Memento. And yeah, that's when I really first got introduced to him.
Yeah, he definitely likes to work with like story structure quite a bit. Like in Memento, how there's the use of color and then black and white and how it's being told within the story. It's very interesting. But I think, yeah, with the exception of like the first three or four of his films, I've seen almost every film in theaters of his. And it's whether you're the biggest Nolan fan or not, I think you can kind of justify seeing every film at least of his once and in the theaters where to see it at.
Yeah, and in a time when theaters are not showing many films, it's interesting that Christopher Nolan was one of the only filmmakers to really open theaters up. And it's fitting because he is a big champion of the theater experience, and specifically IMAX, which he shoots most of his films in IMAX. I don't know how much percentage this one was shot in IMAX, but it's a beautifully shot film with Hoyte von Hoytema, the cinematographer who also worked with him on Interstellar. But he's always trying to do in-person effects, you know, real special effects, not very many green screen, hardly at all. And it was just a very memorable experience watching Tenet this time around. And we're going to get in some background production information, starting off with Kyle. Give us what you got.
Yeah, they, like you did say, they did use very little special effects. And that is one thing I appreciate about Nolan, is I feel like he's one of the few modern day filmmakers where he will go to great lengths to get what he wants without creating the, you know, CGI or the special effects. So that's something I've always appreciated about his films, and especially the fact that he writes his own films. That's, I think, when you're a director and you're also doing the majority of the writing, that's a pretty impressive feat for me. This was a film he had been working on, at least the idea of it, for several years. I think he made the statement that he'd been working on it for a script for about 6 or 7 years. The word itself is like a palindrome. It's Tenet, and it's spelled backwards the same way it is forward, so which is kind of the central idea, perhaps, of the movie. And it was originally inspired by the spaghetti western film Once Upon a Time in the West. He worked heavily with Kip Thorne, who was a guy, a theoretical physicist who had previously worked with Nolan on Interstellar. So, as we kind of explained before, Nolan is always somebody who likes to get into, the science of things, likes to get into the nuts and bolts of things and the minutiae of everything. And so it's always kind of centered around this, maybe, this theory or this idea that he has behind it, and he creates a whole screenplay out of it. But
his whole motto is realism. It goes from the production that he does with little to no green screen whatsoever, but it also goes to the writing process when he's getting real scientifically based theories on record, and then he turns that into a sci-fi experience like in Interstellar, with a lot of the time travel elements that happened in that movie and the black holes and all that stuff. And in this movie, it sounds like he also worked with Kip Thorne to get some theories that were based in somewhat of a reality for this movie, which is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, for sure. The photography, like when they originally began, was actually took place in several different places: Denmark, India, Norway, Italy, United Kingdom, and the U.S. I mean, they were all over the place here. But wouldn't that be kind of cool? Like, you could go travel all these different... If you're, like, working with Nolan on a film, you're basically getting to travel the whole world, I feel like, here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you just kind of get a free ride to travel to all these different locations. I mean, it's a pretty expensive movie to make. In fact, this was one of the most expensive original films, and the reported budget was around $205 million. That's one of the most expensive original films in movie history. And that just shows you how much respect that they give Christopher Nolan and his previous work.
Yeah.
And it's just a shame that he's releasing it in the middle of a pandemic when it's very difficult to get your money back. And in fact, they delayed this film for close to 2 months, really. I mean, it was scheduled July 17 release, and now we're seeing it, you know, in September and late August. August 31st is when we saw it. But
yeah,
and some places are not even showing this. There's critics and people in California and New York that aren't even able to go see this. So yeah, we were really fortunate to see it. So
yeah, that Boeing 747 scene, he actually had purchased that, proving that it was more cost effective than if they were to use some sort of visual effects or miniatures for the plane crash sequence, which you all know there's going to be a plane crash in this film, so it's not a spoiler really, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's in the trailer. Yeah. I know people are worried about the spoilers. This movie is very hard to spoil, I'll just say that.
Yeah,
and we won't really get into spoilers in this review that much because it is so fast-paced and hard to really grasp that it would be hard to for us to even spoil it with just after a first viewing. Maybe if we have more viewings under our belt, maybe we can kind of convey what the actual movie is about.
Yeah.
And you'll see that with a lot of different critic reviews and comments from fans of Nolan. This movie is very difficult to really grasp the first time around.
This movie's really no different than any other Nolan movie in that it's like it's going, and it's going at like a million miles an hour once it starts. And the audience is kind of playing catch up throughout the first half of the movie. And then it's like the reveals start to happen later on where it's like, oh, okay, now that makes sense a little bit. But
that's
always Nolan's goal, is to kind of have you guessing, having ask a lot of questions at the beginning. And then hopefully you'll go along on the journey with him. And, you know, you'll discover just how amazing of a filmmaker he actually is.
Yeah, and he's always been very secretive of his projects. This movie was no different. The level of secrecy in this movie, even amongst the cast, was interesting to learn about. Michael Caine was only given a specific portion of the script, while major stars Robert Pattinson and John David Washington were able to have the full script, but certain cast members weren't even able to have like the real script, which is
That's Michael Caine. He's been movies has he been in?
That's his good luck with charm, and he can't even get.
Yeah, I'm not even giving him a full script.
I mean, there's only a few that he really hasn't been in, and yeah, his most trusted asset couldn't even get the full script, which is interesting. It's not unheard of. They've done this with Star Wars too. I feel like when they were like worried about spoilers there, than the more new Star Wars, more recent Star Wars, they've been more under intense secrecy. But the cast also in this movie, which this movie has an inversion time concept, which is not a spoiler, it's in the trailer. It's when you have certain events happening in real time and you have things kind of inverted in time as well, and including certain lines that were spoken in the film. That was interesting to hear that Kenneth Branagh, that one of the actors in the movie, had to actually speak backwards in a Russian accent. I mean, it's hard enough to have a Russian accent as an English actor like Kenneth Branagh, and then to do it backwards convincingly, very difficult to do.
I wonder how many times he had to do that over.
Right. But, and and Christopher Nolan was one of the directors that was, people were saying he should do a James Bond movie, and he was always saying, you know, if the right time happened, maybe I'll do one if they need a new, like, reimagining of the franchise. And obviously he hasn't been able to do a James Bond movie, but this is probably his closest James Bond movie type experience to kind of, because he's from England. He grew up there and then kind of working in Hollywood. Now he lives in LA too. But this is a very, it definitely takes some blueprints from James Bond and from some of those types of movies.
Yeah, it's kind of his own spy. It's like his own spy thriller, kind of.
Yeah, it's his own James Bond in a way.
Which also they said he was careful about not really watching or kind of abstaining from any other spy genres, just retaining whatever was in his memory, rather than going back and watching any of them.
Yeah, good on him for doing that, because that would be a lot of, I mean, that's a lot of work going back and rewatching all those films. He just kind of has to go from his instincts and his experience. The most impressive thing about this movie, I think, is that it was made with a, it's reported that it was made with 100% practical and stunt effects. And when you actually watch this movie, and you hear that after the fact, because I didn't realize that it was all, I mean, it definitely looks like everything is very real, but I didn't realize it was close to 100% of practical and you know, effects and stunt work, which is incredible.
Wasn't there something that said it was there was like DNEG or something was the company that created like a creates like some visual effect shots? Did they create like maybe a little bit? But yeah, majority of it was pretty much like you said, it was all its own.
It was all in camera. It's no miniatures. It's, you know, real planes crashing into things. It's real buildings being broken down and exploding. He does this in a lot of his other movies too, notably The Dark Knight, where he's blowing up a hospital, and Inception, when he's having a lot of practical effects in that one as well. And in Interstellar, he's actually, oh, and in also in Inception, there's that scene where, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is running down a hallway, and it's a very iconic scene with him and the whole hallway kind of spinning. And that's all done in actual real time off of like some kind of conveyor where they are able to kind of maneuver the entire set. And that was a real, and they also had, you know, what do they call it? They had the harnesses. They were all connected with a harness for safety reasons. But it's still, it's one of his signatures as a director, doing everything in camera.
Yeah,
And
fight sequences are always somehow just so intriguing with Christopher Nolan. Or just like there was one in this one too, that hallway sequence where they move kind of in reverse, and you just
yes.
wonder how was that shot? Like how did they manage to get that?
Well, and I was seeing that some of the actual movements that they had to do when they're doing this inversion time concept, they actually had to act backwards. They actually had to go in and act backwards in certain parts. But it's an, I mean, this just takes up a this takes a lot of practice, a lot of rehearsal. I know John David Washington, I saw some featurettes of him. They were just practicing all those stunt sequences with him in like a hallway that had all padded walls, so they could practice all the stunt work before they could actually do the real thing on the set. But it's just very interesting how they were able to get that visual. Oh, go ahead.
Let's talk a little bit about the music. So
Oh, yeah.
the music was actually done by Ludwig, I'm gonna try to say it, Göransson. He was the one who composed the score, and I believe this is the first film that he has done with Christopher Nolan. And we noticed that Hans Zimmer, who's the frequent collaborator, and he was not able to do this because of commitments he had already made to Dune, which will be coming out next year, hopefully. So, what do we think of the music? What did you
Well, yeah,
think?
it's interesting because there's actually a connection with the Dune in this movie, because it's from one of the same, I think Warner Brothers also is making Dune as well, and they actually had, we were fortunate enough to see a clip of, it was a preview trailer for the trailer that's going to happen later on this month. But the music in this is just, it's almost seems like a Hans Zimmer score in some of the way
It did.
that it's constructed.
I didn't actually realize till the end of the movie that, oh, it wasn't Hans Zimmer that did this score, because I thought it would have been. It had like similar vibes to me as Dunkirk. It's just like this writing energy constantly throughout the film that you got with Dunkirk, and that was a Hans Zimmer score. And you know how he uses shepherd's tone is like this way to kind of keep elevating the music throughout.
Yeah, because he's just constantly ratcheting up the tension, and it's somewhat exhausting at times because you're trying to keep up with this movie and this music is just blaring and blasting, and then you have the sound effects to go with it. And the musical score is very well done, and it does its purpose, it does its work, because there is even a line in the film that is saying, don't think, just feel. And right. That is pretty much sums the movie in a nutshell. Don't think, just feel. Christopher Nolan's wanting you to feel this movie and not necessarily think about all the different plot elements and all the different things that are going on. You just have to feel it. And yeah. Boy, did we feel this movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's, I think this was intentional, but I think what is everyone's biggest complaint of this movie, it's fairly obvious that the sound mixing was something that was a distraction for people. The loudness of the music that people couldn't really follow what their characters are saying, but that's what Christopher Nolan's whole goal was to kind of create the feel more than, you know, just following along with the story so much.
So yeah, and that's one of the more issues that I had with the movie, because he's been guilty of this in other films. Interstellar, mm-hmm. There's times where you can't hear certain moments of the movie and you're like, what's wrong with the sound in the theater? And in fact, they had people complain about that in Interstellar, and they were just telling him that it was done on purpose. Right. And in this movie, you have people talking in masks, and which is kind of funny because we are all in masks, so it's almost
convenient,
like
timing, huh?
A convenient timing for this movie to come out.
Yeah.
And you can't always hear what people are saying. Some people were saying they couldn't hear 30% of the dialogue. I wouldn't go that far, but you definitely have an issue with hearing the dialogue in this movie, and that is going to frustrate some people, and it frustrated me at times.
Oh, yeah, because, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, because, I think like any normal person, when you're trying to follow along with the movie, you can't hear what they're saying. You can't really follow the plot. Well, it kind of makes it, it's like kind of frustrating when you don't know what's going on. And that's, and I think maybe that's a button that Christopher Nolan likes to push on the audiences to create a little frustration, but then to kind of level it back out to kind of, you know, make you come to that ah moment. Like that's what happens. Like, so it is frustrating. But at the same time, I kind of get it. I get what's going on. I get what he's trying to do there.
Yes, and this is a very plot-driven movie. There's very important pieces of information that you are needing, and the movie is just not giving it to you. Like, Christopher Nolan's refusing to give it to you in a cohesive and coherent manner.
Yes.
So things are being said, and you just kind of have to go with it, because it's trying to have so much compact into 2 hours and 30 minutes. There is not always a connection with all of the characters in a meaningful way that you can really relate to them. And that is another issue that people have talked about, and that's an issue I had with the movie as well. There's so much going on, so much intensity and loudness, and it's just hard to follow along with the plot, but then also hard to connect with certain characters. And you know, you have John David Washington as the lead character. You have Robert Pattinson as kind of his agent that is working with him. And then you have a female character that is in trouble, has some troubles of sorts that they're trying to help protect, which all of these cast members do a brilliant job of bringing their characters to life. It's just that Christopher Nolan does not seem to be all that invested into the characters. He's more interested in all of the technical aspects of the movie, which are brilliant.
Yeah. You were talking about that female character, Kat, Elizabeth, played by Elizabeth Debicki.
I think
if I were to say, like, is if there's a character you feel with the most, is it would be her character. I think that's what Nolan's intentions are, is that the most of the feeling will come from her character. And you kind of see how John David Washington, the protagonist, is kind of doing this all to, I guess, help her, right? I mean,
his name. That's how much characterization they give John David Washington.
Yes.
That's literally his name in the movie,
yeah.
Is the protagonist. You don't get any other name for him. But you do, you are right in saying that you do feel the most for her character. they give her the most emotionality, I guess, and purpose for being there. So I guess your enjoyment of the movie is kind of dependent on what you feel for this character,
yeah.
Kat. Similar to Interstellar in that the whole experience of Interstellar and the enjoyment of that comes from your relationship with Matthew McConaughey and his daughter in that movie. And depending on it's been accused of being too sappy and too melodramatic in Interstellar. I felt that it was emotionally powerful in Interstellar, and I actually really highly regard that movie as one of his better movies. But there are people that complain about the sappiness of that relationship, and people didn't really connect with Murph and Matthew McConaughey's character, Cooper. In this movie, it's going to be kind of dependent on that as well. You have to kind of feel for Elizabeth Debicki's character, Kat, in some ways. And if you don't, it's going to feel kind of like a jarring, messy, bombastic, overly loud thriller that you may not experience. So,
well, it does kind of feel like almost slightly contradictory on Nolan's part, maybe, because he almost creates these characters, or they're almost set up almost like chess pieces, it feels like, throughout the film. But and then he wants you to feel the movie. It seems like, well, they're just kind of driving the film or driving the theory of the film, and maybe we're not getting that emotional connection out of something like that. So I guess I could see where, yeah, you're kind of lacking that connection to a character when it's not so character based.
Yeah, and it's just a shame that he couldn't really give us more impactful characters, I think. And really, with the amount of ambition that he had in this movie, I don't know how he would have been able to give us more connection with these characters without cutting out those other aspects of the movie that are technically brilliant and technically interesting and amazing. But so he's trying to balance everything out, and it, in my opinion, doesn't balance out as well as some of his other movies. His ambition is such in this movie that it's so ambitious that it's very difficult to, like I said, balance everything out perfectly.
Well, and, you know, talking about balancing out, like, his brother actually helps on a lot of screenplays, right? Jonathan Nolan?
Yeah.
Well, I was kind of looking back, and, like, I think some of my favorite Christopher Nolan films were kind of with the help of his brother as a screenwriter. So I don't know, maybe those two together kind of balance out a nice, screenplay. But maybe he could have used his brother in this one a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he used him a little bit, but he didn't get a credit in this one. I don't know. That's just me. That's just what I'm thinking. I will say Kenneth Branagh's performance, I think, was the most impressive for me. I think I liked.
Yeah.
I thought he played a good villain.
He went all out with Russian accent, man. He was kind of menacing. I was impressed.
He was very villainous to me. Like, it was totally believable.
Yeah, he was legitimately believable, menacing, and his character worked for me. And I really enjoyed John David Washington's character as well. The first black male lead in a Christopher Nolan movie. Most of his movies do involve a lot of, you know, white actors, or in Inception you have some other ethnicities in Inception as well. But this is his first black character. And it's at a time when the country is very involved in social justice changes. And I think that's an interesting timing on this movie's part as well.
Yeah, I thought it was well deserving. I know that Christopher Nolan had kind of picked John David Washington for the role after seeing Black Klansman. So I think it was well deserved, and I think he did a good job overall.
And even Robert Pattinson, with him kind of working in tandem with John David Washington, kind of like the Bond. He's kind of like a Bond-esque character in this movie. He's very suave. There's a lot of suits that are involved in this movie, and they make some jokes about suits in this film as well, which leads me to some of the humor elements of the movie, which they are few and far between, which you can't, I mean, like I said, it's hard to balance everything, and they try to put bits of humor throughout the movie, but they happen so quickly you barely have time to even think about it or laugh
at
it.
Yeah, to even dwell on it. Well, yeah, you're just trying to follow along with the movie, so like when something funny does happen, it's like, well, you can't really appreciate it because you're trying to figure everything else out. So maybe upon rewatch, it'll have a few more of those funny elements that were maybe kind of left behind or kind of forgotten about, like while we were watching for the first time. But yeah, I thought there was a few moments, but overall, it's just so action-packed and intense that really it's just keeping you focused on its main goal throughout.
Yeah, and it's very well done. This is a movie that is specifically made for IMAX. It has a lot of IMAX shots in this, and the sound design and everything, like I said, it's made to make you feel things, and I definitely felt things in this movie. It was a little overwhelming at times, but it was one of the most memorable theater going experiences, and I'll never forget it. Hoyte van Hoytema, the cinematographer, this is his second movie with Christopher Nolan, because he used to work, actually, I think it's his third movie. He did Interstellar, I believe he did Dunkirk with him, this is his third one. He worked with Wally Pfister before that on several of his other films. And
that's right.
Great work here again, and great special effects work. So technically, sound movie, just very overwhelming at times. It's definitely worth a watch in a theater. I would encourage people, if they are able to, and if they feel safe, and if they're okay with the 40% capacity movie theater experience, where you have hardly anybody around you, I think it's a perfect movie to open theaters back up so we can kind of see other films in the future. Everyone was wearing masks. There's hand sanitizing stations. They clean up the chairs and everything after each showing, I believe, at least the theater that we went to. So,
yeah. So if you're okay, I do recommend going to see it, because if you want to watch an old movie, like we said, go to the theater to see it. That's the experience you want. Go to IMAX and experience it.
And I think this movie, to compare it to some of his other movies, is kind of a mixture of Inception and a little bit of Interstellar, with the way that they have the sci-fi element of the movie. I mean, in obviously Inception, you're going into dreams, and it's kind of more of like it's not as much a spy thriller in that one, in that it's, that one's more of like a heist movie. This is more like a spy thriller, James Bond-esque, with some sci-fi elements that are developed from Kip Thorne, which coincidentally enough worked with Christopher Nolan on Interstellar as well. So those two movies, I'd say, are kind of close to this one. There's not as much of an emotional impact in this movie as I felt in Interstellar. I still feel like Interstellar and Inception, I would give them higher marks than this film as of right now after my first viewing. But with that, we'll kind of get into our overall ranking and overall review of the movie, we've kind of reviewed the movie already, but what would you give the movie, Kyle, on your scale?
I think I will give it a 8 out of 10. And this one was actually kind of a hard one to pick for me, like, because I think I gave Palm Springs an 8 out of 10 or something like that too. But and I do think this is a superior film to Palm Springs. But yeah, like you said, there was a little bit of frustration and just being able to hear it, figure out what's going on in the movie. I think as we gather more of those details, it'll probably be higher for me. But it's Christopher Nolan too, and we hold him in a high regard, so we expect a lot out of him. So yeah, 8 out of 10 for me.
Yes, I put him in high regard. I expect a lot from his movie. I was ecstatic to be able to see this and see it in the theater and at IMAX. I wrote a little piece on Letterboxd about this movie and reviewed it on there, and I gave it 3.5 stars out of 5. It's 3.5 stars out of 5, so that would be about 7 out of 10. And I still stand by that as of the first viewing, because it is difficult to here. He's asking to feel a lot of it as opposed to think about it, but all you're left to do is think about it throughout this whole movie, and you are able, he does enough things visually to help you be engaged and to know somewhat of what's going on, but there is just some frustration that I was left with after watching it for the first time, where I think 7 is just about right for this movie. There are some issues that we talked about earlier, and I'm hoping in the future he can maybe balance those issues out a little bit better in the future.
Maybe do like a films. Maybe slow down a scene every once in a while.
Yeah.
It's just so fast-paced. I feel like I almost need like a little bit of a break in between at moments, you know, a little more ebb and flow there. And it was just, I felt like it was constant. So a little more ebb and flow would maybe be nice.
Yeah, I mean, this is like Christopher Nolan on steroids, basically. Yes.
Yes, there's no doubt it's Christopher Nolan.
He's not holding back at all. He is pulling all the punches in this movie.
Yeah.
And you'll know exactly what I mean when you watch it. And if you watch it in IMAX, I mean, I felt like I was punched in the face a few times.
Yes.
Just watching this movie. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely worth a watch.
Worth
though,
watching,
I think,
though.
So,
for sure.
This is kind of an untraditional review of this movie. We hope you enjoyed us talking about it. We didn't want to get into a spoiler territory. In the future, we hope to really dive in and really explain this movie from start to finish. But it's just getting out into theaters this weekend. So I hope you guys are able to check it out and watch it in IMAX. We had a lot of fun watching it. And hope everyone is able to stay safe and see it. So with this film coming out and being our new movie, we're trying to decide if we want to do a standalone episode for this one or if we want to do like an actual comparison to another work. I think the perfect one to kind of pair with this would be Inception, which is another Christopher Nolan movie. That came out in 2010. You can look for that movie's review. Hopefully next week we'll be able to give that to you. Probably towards the end of next week. And look forward to listening to the background information on Inception and us giving our overall take and review of that film.
Yeah, excited to dig into some more Christopher Nolan because as a filmmaker, I feel like he's earned the right to have a double take. So we do one of his newer ones and we'll do one of his older ones. So looking forward to it.
Thank you guys so much for joining us again this week on Classically Current.
If you like this, please be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast so that you will never miss a show.
And if you guys found value in our show, we'd love it if you guys gave us a review so that we can continue to grow and reach more enthusiastic movie fans in the future.
Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out a lot too.
Be sure to tune in next week.
Thanks again for joining us.
Stay classy
and stay current.